Production. Recorded live.
Hello, welcome again to 42 Minutes with myself, Will Morgan, and Douglas Bowles here on the line today. I hope everybody had a fantastic Christmas season. I know we're probably all just a little bit overwhelmed with what just happened, both in our personal lives and what's happening in the world. Today, so of course, because of that, is going to be a little bit of a shoot from the hip type of day. How are you doing there, Doug?
Well, I got sick right before Christmas, but I'm feeling pretty good. I've had a couple cups of coffee, and I'm ready to crack open the universe and make an omelet or something.
You know, I have a little bit. I'm going to kind of try to wrap a couple of topics in to each other here from the jump, because I actually went to the movies last night and saw The Game of Shadows, the Sherlock Holmes movie, the new one, and it kind of did something to me. I know that, you know, in the last couple of episodes we were talking about, a few episodes ago we started talking a little bit about Oswald and how there in November when the anniversary came up, and now we watched in the movie Interstate 60 not too long ago on the last show, and I started thinking about Oswald again because Gary Oldman plays Oswald in the JFK movie, and he was one of the main focuses of the Interstate 60 or the Interstate Go movie. And it was interesting because, you know, in a way I started to see the Pooka-like resonance of Gary Oldman's character as Sirius Black and as the O.W. Grant character bleed into Oswald for the very few things that Oswald said up underneath public scrutiny when he was still alive were things like, I am a patsy, and things of that nature, which is almost like a... you know, if you really dissect his words, it's a way into understanding conspiracy theory. It was like a Pooka introduction into conspiracy theory. And then I had, you know, of course, I got the new Stephen King book for Christmas. And so I sat down last night to Sherlock Holmes with an individual, a friend of mine, a close friend of mine, who actually does a conspiracy show on a local radio station here. So when I sat down, I was in a conspiratorial set of mind. And I failed to mention that earlier this week, doing my usual ritual of gaining audio for the workday, I listened to something like 400 minutes of JFK conspiracy theory. And everywhere I went, people were bringing it up. Really, I'm lying. I was the one bringing it up the whole time.
Okay, so one of the things we kind of arrived at last week was this idea that we kind of gravitate toward, you know, the story that we need to, you know, heal or talk to whatever moment needs to be illuminated for us, kind of thing.
Right.
So what is this saying?
So you guys talked about that. Went after I had left between you, Alan, and Stefan?
Oh, yeah, we went around and around about this, you know, this movie that you chose for us, because it was a really fun experiment, because I don't know if it's a movie that I know it's not a movie I would have found. I don't know about the other guys, but then just to look at it, it was almost like there was a little bit of distance between us and the movie because you picked it, you know, so it gave us a different experience than if we were to just bump, you know, come upon this movie and watch it. So
I know, I agree. I mean, I think that's what I was getting at too. You know, I'm very interested in trying to understand alternative points of view on this, on the whole subject of think. Because I think I understand the fact that it's very interpersonal. And the movie comes to you, and because, you know, but your nervous system is the one that is watching it. It is somehow imprinted with your point of view. And I believe that the main division in the community of Think is the non-understanding of other points of view.
That oftentimes there's this moment where people are fighting, even though the same desire or goal, you know, it's the same. There's this commonality of language. It's just the elephant in the room again, where, you know, one person's at the tail, one person's at the trunk, and they're fighting about the nature of the elephant. It's like, oh, you don't understand this elephant at all. But you know what I mean?
Right. It's the whole, no, the elephant, you know, blue with pink polka dots. You're like, no, the elephant's pink.
Well, if the room is dark and we're trying to describe this thing, what, you know, the difference between the tail and the trunk, you know, it's the same beast.
So what happened with me last night, though, is, you know, I went in there with my friend because I didn't want to go alone. My family left right after Christmas, so I was going to be here for the next couple of days by myself at the house. And, you know, being the father, I'm sure you understand, the father is not the one who gets the presents on Christmas. So I gave myself a little movie present. And so we sit down, and the first preview that comes on is this new movie called This Means War. And we were talking about the possibility of World War III the entire night. You know, how there's a lot of activity going in the Middle East and a lot of friction between Russia and China. And I get a lot of my news as far as alternative news goes from the Corbett Report, which, as a side note, the Corbett Report on December 20th just had an interview with Frank Albo, the Winnipeg legislative, the studier of that, the guy who gets the tours up in Winnipeg of the legislative building, the peg leg, good friends with Jim Saunders. But he also has been predicting stuff. See, I bring this up because, like Bill Cooper, who said there was a lot of synchronicities in the first chapter of his book, Behold a Pale Horse, I've noticed that there's been a lot of predictions by studying conspiracy theory by people like May Brussel, and most recently, the Corbett, or James Corbett from the Corbett Report. James Corbett from the Corbett Report noticed a lot of news coming out about drones. And how he mentioned Think in one of his shows talking about predictive programming. And the idea of predictive programming is that stuff comes out in movies to basically get us used to a certain idea before it is pushed on us by the elite, correct? Do you understand? Do you follow me when I'm talking? I'm not just jabbering here.
You're not jabbering, yeah. But that's what I was saying, too, that On a microcosmic level, you gravitate towards the story.
Right.
Telling you about now. So it'll
right.
help you through your now, your personal now, whereas oftentimes the larger themes that we see in the news or society, you know, like when you have multiple revolutions going on in disparate locations in the world, you know, and at the same time you got certain movies that are kind of illuminating the now.
Based off of what we learned from the Christopher Meyer show, and how he was actually trying to say
something I wanted to mention. You were saying disagreement, you know, and Christopher Myers made a great point of saying how consciousness gets in the way of the experience, where one of the problems is that the individual thinks that how they perceive the situation is the situation, but we all have our own unique, you know, nervous systems that are, you know, they can't take in the entire situation, and so it's like a movie or a book, and so our interpretation becomes how we view the world, our point of view, but then it once we begin to think that our point of view is the point of view, I think that's where sometimes the disagreement comes from. That,
well, like Myers and other people said, you know, the magic works if you believe that it works. And when people are wrapped into, say, conspiracy theory and they believe what they're saying and that happens, I don't think that that's necessarily validation for or proof of their prediction. You know, because we know that we can draw things close to us through, you know, throwing little think bombs out there and stuff. I've seen it in my own work aside from Myers. I just think that Myers is like almost the focal on that. So like Mae Brussel predicted that there would be some, back in the 80s, she predicted, Mae Brussel is a California or Southern California conspiracy theorist since like the 60s and 70s. Directly after Kennedy was shot, she got obsessed with the Warren Commission and picked it to pieces, discovering all kinds of conspiracy theories that involved, you know, ex-Nazis controlling the what we now know as the American government. But that all aside, she predicted sometime, or a couple of different times in the 80s, where she would have a show one day. Say, for example, she said that Reagan would probably, you know, somebody was probably going to try to push Reagan out of office. The very next day, there was an attempted assassination on him, much like Kennedy. And so you might see it as validation that Mae Brussel was right, but I don't necessarily think that that's true. To go back to the Corbett report, James Corbett predicted that we would see a lot more drones in the news. Do you understand? These drones that the American government or the American military use in different arenas across the, you know, the war globe, all of a sudden there was a lot of news about them being hacked or them being controlled. I mean, he said it was predictive programming, and then directly after he said it, like the very next day, in the news said that a drone went down in Iran. Did you know about this?
No.
So these drones were basically being told that these drones are being hacked or they're being controlled through computers and then being taken over. Directly after that, like a couple of weeks after that, an actual drone was used on American soil to catch some cattle rustles down near the border in Texas, which is probably another news story that you didn't catch. However, it was in the newspapers. All of a sudden, we're being told that it's okay to use drones on American citizens, which was told to us, you know, years ago, would never have been done. Last night, when I'm watching The Game of Shadows with Sherlock Holmes, a fucking movie comes on that's called This Means War, and during the previews, they show a drone chasing down a car on American soil, and I'm like, this can be construed as predictive programming right off the bat. Not only is the freaking thing called This Is War, like This Is War on American soil with a freaking drone, what's also interesting, though, is that the main actor that I noticed while watching this movie was Tom Hardy. You might remember Tom Hardy best as the guy from Inception with that main cue, and he's like, "You must dream bigger, darling." You know who I'm talking about?
Yes. Okay.
So he's in this movie, which is a real cheesy movie with Reese Witherspoon, where he's a CIA agent. He's being chased by drones. The name of the movie is This Means War. The next preview, directly after it, was The Dark Knight Rises. And we all know that Tom Hardy is playing Bane, the main bad character. And it shows Bane go onto a football field and blow the whole field up in the preview. And the only thing I could think of was domestic terrorism. And I'm like, we just got a download of Tom Hardy being used twice, like back to back. You couldn't tell. I mean, the average person who didn't know that was the same actor, because in the Dark Knight preview, his face is covered up.
So here's an email.
What's that? Are you following what I'm getting at here? I mean,
following, but it's so. Here's an email I sent to I think it was Alan, like in December 17th or something. It says, "It's interesting to me that Jake and Jim have embarked upon 1984. I'm currently a portion into 1Q84 by Haruki Murakami. As Alan knows, Q in Japanese is 9. This is a new book that's out right now, this famous Japanese author, and it's taking place in 1984, and I've been reading it. And it's winking at the George Orwell 1984. The Mask of God kind of discovered that 1984 is mind control and that 1985 is time travel. If I were about to make a Goro-type prognostication, sadly, I would have to say that we are headed for dark times. She is dead, and I've been dwelling upon that, but my oracle, the Black Iron Prison, is rapidly moving into its Nazi phase, fascism on the march. So, conspiracy, 1984, and then you're saying darkness. What do we do with that? What do you think?
I'm not saying darkness necessarily, because this is the key right here. I mean, the majority of the people who are wrapped in conspiracy theory will automatically say, this is what this means. This means predictive programming. We're being programmed, and for instance, Jake Gyllenhaal, he's a good one, because he's in this movie about him being the Jarhead and being in the Afghan War. He's in another movie, Brothers, where his brother comes back from the Afghan War. They're sitting at the dinner table, and they're talking about the ones with beards being the enemy. So there's this, you know, there's kind of an influence being presented there. Directly after that, he made this movie called The Source Code, which deals with domestic terrorism. It was dealing with, you know, a train blowing up, and it was dealing with it being actually an American citizen, because the first thing that Jake Gyllenhaal thinks is that it's the Muslim. He's got to figure out this mystery, and he immediately thinks it's the Muslim, and ends up being he's wrong. It's not the Muslim. Ends up being a domestic terrorist, but this comes directly after we found out that Osama bin Laden was, you know, planning supposedly to blow up trains. So the domestic terrorism with the new NDAA law being passed that, you know, American citizens can be detained like terrorists. There's good enough evidence to say that that is what it is, but if that's what you automatically perceive as reality, that's what you're going to see it as. The trick, however, is to know the fiction before it hits the cinema. Like you just sent me Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy.
I went to a movie last night, too, kind of impromptu. My wife and I went and watched The Descendants with George Clooney.
Yes.
But you were talking about Gary Oldman, and there was this huge poster. I mean, not even a regular size poster, but a huge poster for that movie, which, you know, I didn't know about. But since Gary Oldman is sinking, you know, I thought, well, you know, I'd send you the link, and maybe something would come out of it. But the theme that I'm experiencing is this idea of the dead girl in the center, right? And you know, Expective Vallis. Or Shutter Island, Inception, you know, all these movies with the dead girl.
Dream House.
The thing that was interesting about The Descendants is, so the dead girl is present, it's his wife. And they can't stop the wife, the mother, from being dead. And then they find out all the awful things that the mother, the wife, had done. You know, so it's that the sophistication and complexity of loving someone, it's forgiveness. You know, they need to forgive her and let her go. You know, it's not so black and white as she wronged me, I'm glad she's dead, or, you know, she's totally screwed me over. And to bring it back to the conspiracy theme, it's like, because of how the various people in this movie were wronged, they could make decisions based on that, you know, to create a world based on the harms that they received from the dead girl.
Well, okay. This, once again, though, this goes to the dead girl is a very vibrant scene. And, like Leonardo DiCaprio's composite character, where you have Revolutionary Road, Shutter Island, and Inception going back to back, bam, bam, bam. Well, basically, they're all the same movie, dealing with the dead girl controlling him. But see, this is what the what I was getting at. Like, you sent me about Tinker, Taylor, Soldier, Spy, and with Revolutionary Road as an example, and also Sherlock Holmes, which I experienced last night. These storylines are much older than the year that they were made. You know what I mean? Revolutionary Road was very much highlighted on the painstaking lengths they went to present a movie that was as close to the book as possible. You know, this Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, where we have Oswald Oldman as he's a spy in that, right? Carrying on that theme with him, the Secret Service kind of mole, double spy conspiracy theme. I mean, that book was made in 1974. And even though I'm sitting here watching Sherlock Holmes last night, thinking, you know, all right, this movie is about a planned assassination to start a war. You know what I mean? And they're talking about a single gunman. And I'm like, it's fucking Oswald again in my head. It's the coup d'etat. But at the same time, I'm like, but that's not all that's in this movie. Because I know Sherlock Holmes. I've read the entire catalog of Sherlock Holmes. And they are doing a freaking bang-up job at presenting this material. I mean, they made whoever played Moriarty, they made his head kind of big, foreheaded cranium, which is the exact description of Moriarty. I'm like, you know, to most people sitting there in the theaters, wouldn't know that. But you're like, okay, fucking Guy Ritchie's done his homework. You know what I mean? This isn't trash that's being presented to us. And that's the point I guess I'm trying to make, is how all of these fictions that are made, you know, a long time ago through graphic novels or through regular novels, fiction, they line up perfectly according to when they're made and put out in movies, and that can't be just predictive programming.
Because are they of their moments? You know, they reflect the moment in which they're created, and
right.
It just speaks to the interconnected and interpenetration of the universe, or what we call think.
Right. So what we're presented with is the whole spectrum of think. You know, there's a lot more going on in Sherlock Holmes. There was a lot of gay connotations. You know, if you're a subscriber to the Celtic Rebel, there was plenty there. But that's not all that was there. If you're a subscriber to the Jake Kotze and Jim Sanders type of world, the Thompson twins up there who believe that everything points to joy, there's plenty of that in the movie, too. There's 724s, there's 723s, almost flashed at you at a subliminal rate. You get what I'm saying? But there's also a very heavy-laden conspiracy theory side, too. So what we're presenting...
What Alan was saying last week, as he was watching Interstate 60, he was saying how he could see how the various individuals could find their own, you know, he could write the Celtic Rebel post because he watched it from that mindset, or, you know, so he slipped into that point of view. And then he talked about Jason Barrera, how he comes up with a Gnostic interpretation of every story. And so Alan was talking in terms of levels, that movies have these, or layers, you know, that you... And we were talking a little bit about that before we started the call, how the core truth for all of this tends to be the elephant is the same damn elephant, but we have to peel this onion skin off you know, and get through the different layers to finally realize that we're talking about the same thing. Are you kidding?
Well, we're just talking about aspects of the different things. I mean, everything is almost fractorially limitless. You can pick apart any movie. You don't have to just pick an actor. You can sit there like Joe Alexander has done with the Back to the Futures, where he just dug every treasure out of Back to the Future that he could. However, you know, an individual such as James Wright, for instance, can go in there and watch it and endlessly dig out other treasures that pertain to what he himself as a nervous system would see. I think that what our job is as sync heads is not necessarily to present a certain point of view, but to learn the tools.
You boil it down. Our jobs as sync heads. Okay, and then with that, talk about the word predictive programming. Because it seems so loaded to me. I mean, it's there's an implication there that there's someone running the show, right? And they want to achieve a certain result from the show or the play.
Right.
So, and so it's totally nefarious, right? That who's calling the shots?
Right. And I think, like we've experienced from, even if they're not, you know, box office stars, individuals that we know such as Andres Jones, who have actually asked the question on is it possible to control a movie set, and what Christopher Myers, whatever you may think of him, has told us, that it's just impossible. There's too much going on a movie set. I believe those...
God is, or... Right? I mean, because that's where I always end up, is that if there's a grand conspirator, it ends up having to be God. And he's a fucker.
I don't know. I mean, I understand the conspiracy. We have to understand the nature of human beings. To say that there are no conspiracies is fucking stupid. We are conspiratorial animals. This is what we do.
Right.
You know, even us, in a way, we conspire because we sit here and we throw emails back and forth between shows, or we talk before shows trying to get an idea of how we're going to present ourselves in 42 minutes, but it's really a conspiracy. Well, what we're showing the world is not the whole picture. We're trying to lead them to a certain understanding, which is basically, in my opinion, a definition of conspiracy. It's like, make something look like one thing when it's actually something else. Pulling strings, puppeteering.
It was when Jake and Jim were on that we were also talking about conspiracy, and there was that great Robert Anton Wilson quote about, I'm not going to be able to pull it out, but
I remember about the eye and your friends. I think that's the understanding. But I mean, the word shadow comprehends. I feel that you could have possibly see them using that on purpose. The whole movie is about Moriarty and Holmes are playing chess the entire movie. And Moriarty is the Black King. Like, he keeps putting forth this Black King off the chessboard. It's funny because right now people can't see, but you're wearing a shirt that says peace, love, and chess. And Moriarty, that's the whole point. Like, Moriarty is Holmes' shadow. They don't flat out say that, but they're mirror images of each other. And it's this confrontation of the shadow.
On Facebook, I found this image that I really liked because I think it depicted reality a little better. Chess is square and controlled. It's in our mind can understand. So within that square, it's infinite, the possibilities, but you have the duality. You have the black and the white, and the universe is complete. But in this image I found, the chessboard was circular, and you had white, black, and gray. And I just thought, yeah, of course, you know, you got the gray out there, you know, putting a wrench into the gears of the white and the black. Or maybe that's the synthesis of the white and the black.
I think conspiracy is the shadow. For some reason, when you said gray, it was interesting. When I was editing the Christopher Meyer show, I almost took out this excerpt from the Manly P. Hall lecture that was called White, Black, and Gray Magic. Anyways, let's focus. And when you said gray, let's focus. The dead mom or the dead mom or the dead wife.
Okay, so for me, they can't do anything about the dead girl.
Right.
And so in my own life, you know, I have my own oracles, and I've been dealing with loss. You know, I'm seeing something like the idea that perhaps something horrible is coming, but at the same time, you know, experiencing the Titanic is sinking again. You know, we're seeing these kind of dark symbols coming at us, you know, and part of me thinks, well, maybe we can prevent the sinking of the Titanic, right? You know, we can save her. But, you know, it might be part of the story that the dead girl, you know, she's dead. You can't save her.
Which would be a lesson that, but see, a lot of things are happening at one time. The dead girl theme, which is very high in Philip K. Dick. Philip K. Dick's exegesis was just printed, I think sometime in November, just now. It was like the most of it that's ever been printed before.
Yeah, I was going to...
It's like the new gospel. In a way, it is the fucking new gospel. Do you know what I mean? And so that's a great thing that has happened. Another great thing is that conspiracy theory, there's more light shown on this shadow of conspiracy than there has been ever in history. I mean, we know things. And even though, like, certain things, like, for instance, by Mae Brussel, was perhaps said in the 70s, the 80s, or even the 60s, we as people, you know, me growing up in Alabama as a little kid, my only real connection or source of information about, say, the assassination on JFK was when my dad showed me the movie at 6 or 8. For a long time, my only information on that conspiracy would have been from that movie. However, now, you know, because of the internet, all of a sudden in this part of the timeline, I can listen to 400 minutes of evidence that the CIA killed Kennedy or whatnot. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So things are accelerating. Yeah, things look dark. But things look dark only because there's so much light shining right now.
Okay. We started by talking about gravitating towards certain stories that'll help us illuminate our darkness. Maybe we have about 10 minutes, I think. Okay. But, you know, stories are what gunslingers deal in lead, but it seems like humans deal in stories, and that we use a story to kind of create our point of view or to understand reality. And sometimes they become traps where we get stuck in stories. You know, we get stuck in the idea of how things are supposed to go. And so we need to be open to new stories. But what if, you know, so like a culture oftentimes will have a myth at its core, and that's how they interact with the universe. And last week we were talking about, you know, I kept talking about The Godfather and how it's a revenge story, that the reason why things are the way they are is because it's a response to what came before. And so now I'm wondering about, instead of a revenge story, a forgiveness story, where if we replace the old, I mean, and this has been done before, you know, it's the old law is replaced by the new law, which is that the New Testament, you know?
Right.
Hmm.
Well, you... So for some reason, I'm thinking of Luke Skywalker and his dad. Because, I mean, all revolutions are just sons against their fathers, right?
Yeah.
And the pushing back of what was already established. But see, at the very end of Star Wars, the father is forgiven, the shadow. And there's no doubt about the shadow connotations of Vader at all.
We need to read the last piece in the Sync book. We need to read to see what Jason comes up with. I'm curious. It seems like he gets to the end of the story. Out, you know, and this would be the happy ever after ending, or you know, to the point where you transcend traditional reality. Alan was saying that George Lucas planned on making, you know, 3 more movies where Luke Skywalker is complaining about how crappy his life is for another 3 movies. You know, that you can't win the system. Or, you know, you can't transcend the confines of what you know. It's a constant give and take between, you know, reconciling your light and your dark halves. And what happens, it seems like, is when people externalize their dark halves, then we have the war, because these two halves need to be reconciled, but they're unwilling to face the fact that the darkness is in them. And so then we manifest this war. And from my own stuff, the war is coming. You're right, because at my work, my job drives me crazy because it's like a microcosm for, and it feels like we're externalizing our demons and we're getting ready for this big war. But the Descendants, you know, George Clooney made peace with his dead wife and created a new world in Hawaii, in paradise. So, you know, that's the hope.
Was it? Did it have some Dante's Inferno connotations? It sounds like it did. I mean, he's always, in Dante's Inferno, he's always looking for his wife at the end of paradise.
No, no. You might be
that's
just...
a story. That's a story of the Inferno, or the comedy, the Divine Comedy. It's the dead wife. It's the missing wife that is the carrot at the end of the stick.
Yes, right. And then, yes, the highest good is Beatrice. No, in this one it's interesting because it's my theme, you know. They were given this piece of property, virgin property in Hawaii, and now they have to develop it or else they lose it. You know, so here's this beautiful green patch of, it's pure potential. And George Clooney is the executor of this family, and they need to develop it. So they're looking at all these, putting these huge casinos and golf courses, you know, and he's dealing with his dying wife the whole time, and what that helps him come to his own decision about what should be done with the land. And if I tell you any more, I spoil the movie for, you know, the 200,000 people in our chat room. We have 2 minutes, Will.
All right. I like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy because it's all about conspiracy theory, but you also have the word tinker that stands forth as another hint to Jupiter.
The comedian, well, I think of tinker as like someone tinkering with the gears of the universe, you know, took back to conspiracy. But then the comedian and the Watchman, you know, realized that it was all a joke. And I think Robert Anton Wilson realized it was all a circus.
Right. But that's actually what the main part of that that Tinker Tailor, the word circus comes up in the first part of the Wikipedia page, but then the first two. All right. To leave off with, I don't know why, I just want to, but I'm looking at Leonardo DiCaprio because we were talking about the dead wife, and I just want to pinpoint how related the whole dead wife and the conspiracy thing are. DiCaprio is littered with conspiracy. He conspires in the Quick and the Dead with Russell Crowe to beat the leader of the town. The Man in the Iron Mask is a conspiracy to overthrow the king. Gangs of New York, he's a double agent. Catch Me If You Can, he's being chased by the Men in Black of the FBI. The Aviator, Howard Hughes being one of the biggest nodes in conspiracy theory to ever be. The Departed, he's another double spy. Blood Diamond deals with the Diamond Conspiracy. Body of Lies, he conspires with Russell Crowe again. Shutter Island is a Nazi mind control conspiracy, as is Inception. And then just recently, he was in J. Edgar Hoover, who comes up in just about 300 of the 400 minutes I listened to about the JFK conspiracy. Just thought that I would get that out there. Fodder for Sync Kids. How much time do we got left?
We have about a minute. Have you ever seen Brazil?
No. 1982.
No, it's not. It's actually 1984 and a half. That's what they were. I think it came out in 1985, but it's got it all, but it's conspiracy, terrorism. It's a Christmas movie too, which is, I watched it the other day from start to finish, but I just don't know what to make of the ending. And so maybe you should watch that sometime and we'll have to talk about it.
That's a great idea. I like, this show has been a different, a switching of gears, but somehow it seems to have, you know, emerged or blossomed from all of the other previous shows.
Well, I'm on the wrong screen. That's it for us today. It was a good time. We'll talk next week.
All right. See you next year.